Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Jerry Needham. I'm an assistant federal public defender. I'm representing the appellant, Mr. Garcia-Romero. Mr. Garcia-Romero is a Mexican national who was charged in this district with illegal reentry into the United States subsequent to an aggravated felony conviction. The predicate aggravated felony occurred approximately 12 years prior to his arrest here in Oregon. He received a 20-some-odd-month sentence on that case. He was back in the United States for approximately 8 years after his deportation, about 3 years after his deportation he came back. He was in the United States about 8 years working, supporting his stepson and also his natural child. Approximately 1 year before he was arrested, the mother of his child, who he was divorced from at the time, gave him an ultimatum that come and get the child. She's not going to take care of him anymore.
We are aware of the facts. Let me just sort of get to the bottom line of what concerns me about your argument and see if you can respond to this. The district court, for the most part, agreed with the argument that defense counsel made, that there was an unusual bond with the son that should mitigate the sentence, and the court departed downward very, very significantly on account of that. And, I mean, it seems like your basic argument is, well, the court should have done more, and I don't understand how we could decide that that is unreasonable under the standards that the Supreme Court has recently set out for us.
Sure. There was procedural error. Two instances. One, the court listened to the government and seemed to acknowledge the government's statement and took into consideration these improper arguments that the government made, and the court relied on that. Secondly,
but which argument? The one about the child and the state proceeding, you mean?
Pardon me?
You mean the argument about the child and the state proceeding?
Well, what the government said in page 15 on the excerpt of record, it said, it seems to me if we were to make any comment about the adoption proceeding, it would be that Mr. Garcia-Romero is trying basically to take an American citizen from the United States and have him live in Mexico in an environment that the child doesn't know, has never been in, knows no one down there, and there is would simply not be in the best interest of the child.
Where do you see that the district court ever...
Pardon me?
Did the court, though, adopt that? As I understand it, your argument is that the government's statements were wrong, and the court listened to those arguments, but doesn't it have to listen even to bad arguments from both sides?
Well, it can listen, but the court must explain that they're rejecting those arguments and tell this court.
Didn't the court implicitly do that by departing downward for the reasons that the defense counsel gave?
Well, in this case, the district court said to the government counsel, I want you to know I'm not crediting all of defense counsel's arguments, that you make some good points, and I don't want you to worry about that.
Isn't that sort of normal judge puffery, though? I mean, where do you find... I mean...
No, I understand the court doesn't have to explain every nuance or every
argument. We may today tell people that they've given great arguments and you might disagree, you know, but does that... I guess I don't really understand where you can point that the court actually adopted something specific that was incorrect.
Well, the court should have rejected those arguments and put that on the record, because the government said no one should interfere with an individual's right to have custody of their own child. The government was saying that the court shouldn't allow this individual, this defendant, to proceed as a parent in this adoption proceeding.
What is the other procedural error that you allege?
Well, the procedural error is, one, relying on these inaccurate, improper arguments. That's a procedural error. And also not giving us a clear picture of why the court got to the sentence it did. Now, the court, on first blush, it looks like... I'm sorry.
He didn't go as far down as you wanted. You wanted to essentially time served so he'd be
correct
out of prison, so he might have a stronger case in adoption. court didn't go down that far, but he did go down substantially.
Well, he
explained why.
Okay.
On the basis of legitimate reason.
In this district,
What you're saying is that he should have gone down farther and should have sentenced time served so that he could go to the option to represent, even if he could go there in person, be in a better position to use the option. That's what you think should be.
Well, just because it would have been a reasonable sentence and been an appropriate sentence.
It may have been, but you're saying that that's the only reasonable sentence that could flow from his finding,
well,
bonding and parting down financially.
On first blush, it looks like it's a huge departure, five levels. But the backdrop of this case is, in this district, individuals are offered a 30-month fast-track disposition. And this
that didn't apply to him.
Pardon?
It did not apply to him.
It did apply to him. He was offered that
he
by
didn't,
the government.
He didn't
he
take
rejected it.
Well, when he rejected it, doesn't he has to live with the consequences of that, which may not always be good consequences. I don't understand what procedural requirement there is. Requirement, as distinct from exercise of discretion, would demand that the court go back to the thing that the defendant didn't do, which is the fast track.
Well,
that's really what you're saying. Even though it was really not done, the district court had to do it. That's really what you're saying. And I don't know what the authority is for that.
Well, the court should have rejected the government's arguments, first of all. But secondly, the fast track disposition would have required him to plead guilty to counts 2 and 3 of the indictment, where the statutory maximum would have been 30 months. He rejected that, even though he was eligible for it, pled guilty to a more severe crime, count 1 of the indictment, which was a 20-year maximum, more time on supervised release, up to 3 years of supervised release. So the court was recognizing that would have been his guidelines if he had taken the offer, but he wouldn't have been able to advocate for a lower sentence. He would have had to have agreed to 30 months. So although
I understand all his reasons, but what you're saying is that the district court's hands were tied procedurally by that sequence of events, and I don't understand the authority for that.
The defendant's counsel and the defendant's hand would have been tied if he had taken the government's
right. And now you're saying that the district court's hands were tied,
right?
Simply by the fact that that was a possibility that never came to fruition.
Well,
but that somehow, in spite of the fact that it never came to fruition, represented in
the court
feeling.
Mm-hmm. Counsel, on the first point, at ER 19, the court said, "I don't have anything to do with," and I mean the custody decision. Isn't that enough to, I mean, I don't think really need to satisfy what you talked about in the first problem, but isn't that enough to satisfy your concern that the court rejected the argument about the state court?
Yeah, of course the court.
What more would the district court have to do, if anything?
Well, when the government is saying interfere.
And the district court's saying, you know, that's out of my hands. I don't have anything to do with that. Isn't that pretty clearly a rejection of the court's involvement in that? I don't think he has to, but if he did that, the record suggests that he did, then isn't he done from your perspective that he's complied with what you need?
Well, from our perspective, when he says he credits the government's arguments after defense counsel makes his
own. Whether he credits it or not, he says, I don't have anything to do with that.
But but when he credited their arguments, he referenced the guideline 5H1.6, family ties and responsibility. So he specifically referenced that.
I take your point because Mr. Sadie stood up right away and said, I object to the implications of counsel's argument and thought it was very disturbing.
Right.
And it sounded very, jingoism and all of that, you know, why should we let this Mexican take his son back to Mexico? He's an American citizen and all of that. So that was troublesome, and Mr. Sadie objected to it. But this whole discussion of the adoption proceeding and the 5H1.6 came about because you all raised it, because it was
part of the assessment. So that guideline was in there, and this whole adoption proceeding was brought in on the family ties basis. So for him, for the district court to make reference to that and talk about that, you were all skirting, I mean, you weren't, I guess none of you here in the courtroom were in that courtroom, but it's, as I read the transcript and the back and forth, it sounds like there was a lot of talk, trying to walk a fine line between getting over in the adoption proceeding, and then the district court ultimately went to the guts of what was before him, which was the evidence of bonding. That was what the legitimate concern was. Now, you would have liked him to have, A, I gather, said, I agree with Mr. Sadie, and it's a reprehensible argument, and I expressly disavow it.
Although he did say, Mr. Sadie, I hear very clearly what you're saying, and you're very persuasive in this, which is about what he said to the
judge. But he said before that, he said, you raised some legitimate points, and I think that's where you're objecting to. But in any event, looking at the...
Well, I mean,
it may have been an unfortunate statement, but I still think ultimately we have to look at what the court objectively did. And what the court objectively did, I think the burden you're having is that the court showed extreme sensitivity to your client and just didn't go as far as you'd like.
I would just submit when a sentence is outside of the guidelines, the court must give us more information, and particularly with this record, it
outside
did.
The guidelines downward?
Downward, yes.
So he went down, but he didn't give enough?
He did go downward because he recognized that it was an extremely unusual case and there was a very strong relationship between the father and the son, and the father was essentially the only the caregiver for the...
Counsel, isn't that a bizarre argument? I mean, had the court applied strict guideline sentence, your client would have been sentenced to more time. And here you are objecting that he went downward, claiming it's unreasonable. Why would defense counsel even be making this argument?
I'm not objecting that he went downward. I'm objecting that the government
didn't go down far enough.
Well, I understand you're saying he should have gone more, but I mean the theological construct of this is you're saying that he didn't follow the guidelines. Well, if he followed the guidelines, he would have been higher. You're saying he didn't go down far enough, but what case law do you rely upon that suggests that he had to go down any further?
Well, I was saying under Gaul, the court, when it does depart, has to give specific reasons so that this court can decide if that departure was reasonable.
And he did. He said that he finds this case to be extremely unusual because of the familial responsibility and the extraordinary relationship with the child. That's the reason that he gave. Isn't that the exact reason that you asked for it?
The court very well would have gone further if not for these improper arguments from the government.
We understand your position, and you're several minutes
Thank
over
you.
Time. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court, Kelly Zusman appearing on behalf of the United States today. On the issue about the quantum of the district court's explanation for the sentence imposed, in addition to the reasons that the court has acknowledged and cited, I'd also point out more towards the beginning of the sentencing hearing, the district court judge here cited to United States versus Manyweather. It was the only case he cited. He said that he had read it and found it instructive because it dealt with the issue of family circumstances. And in Manyweather, this court held that a departure of 1 to 4 levels was considered the norm for family circumstances. So I think we need to include that piece when we're looking at the adequacy of the explanation given. The judge then went at great length to discuss the unique family circumstances, what he found was an extraordinary bond, and the guideline that would have applied but for his departure was 46 to 57 months. I think the district court here committed no procedural error. By no means did he adopt any of the arguments of the government. I think the result here shows conclusively that he, in fact, accepted the contrary arguments of the defendant. We haven't cross-appealed, and just to invoke a case from earlier this week, In Sprint v. Mendelson, and that's at 128 Supreme Court 1140, at footnote 2, the Supreme Court specifically addresses the issue about when and whether an appellate court should assume that a district court has adopted an erroneous argument that's raised by an attorney. And what the court said was you should only do so when the district court makes it clear that it's actually adopting that argument. The district judge here, all he said about the government's argument was that the government had raised some legitimate points.
Do you think, is the government's position that that was a proper argument to be making, an observation that district court should weigh the fact that the consequence would be a Mexican citizen taking an American born child to Mexico?
I think both parties started getting very speculative about
I'm not asking about both parties. I'm asking about the government's statement.
I think it was a fair inference from the record.
So you think that's a proper thing that the court should have taken?
I think it's a proper argument. And let me, if I may, give some context to this. Almost every week in federal district court, we have individuals who come before the court for sentencing who ask for downward departures based upon cultural assimilation. And what they tell our district court judges is, look, give me a lower sentence because I have been in the United States so long that sending me back to Mexico poses a significant hardship.
I see those too, counsel. I'm still asking how, in this case, does the fact that the consequence of allowing this man to be sentenced to time served and able to argue for the benefit of his retaining or gaining custody of his child instead of being put up for adoption or put into a foster home, why is that a proper argument?
I think somehow the
natural father, who happens to be a Mexican citizen, might take him to Mexico.
I think...
Especially after Elian Gonzalez. You do remember that debacle.
I do remember that, Your Honor. And two points. One is, I think what the prosecutor here was attempting to say was, look, we don't know this situation. That what's going on in the state custody proceeding, I don't think any of us can say what is the proper course there. State custody proceedings, who is going to be an appropriate parent or guardian, those are very complex, fact-intensive issues. We know from Mr. Sadie's submissions.
You're basically saying the government's position is proper to invoke the fact that the natural father would be filed from the United States, and it would be better off, or in the
And I wouldn't go that far. I think what she was
trying to explain all sorts of reasons. I'm dealing with what was said in this case.
And I think what was
seemed to say, yes, you can rationalize.
I don't think there was anything improper about questioning whether or not what the defendant was promoting was in fact in the best interest of the child, because that was something that really ought to be resolved by the state custody proceeding and not by a federal district judge who was tasked solely with imposing a sentence on an illegal reentry defendant. I think for all of the reasons we've discussed, the district court here committed no procedural error, imposed a sentence that is substantively reasonable, and the judgment should be affirmed. Unless the panel has any further questions, I'll submit.
I don't believe so.
It might be a useful one to take back to the office, run through, and be confronted with proper time.
And
I'll leave it at that. Take the point.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And, Mr. Needham, you exceeded your time, so the case is now submitted. We appreciate the arguments that both of you brought to us today. The next case on our docket, it's still morning, this morning, is Spilatz, I'm probably mispronouncing that, please correct me, versus Astrew.